Absolutely. I think overall, Binghamton is it's a phenomenal place, be honest with you. I feel as though what's helped me create the connections and things here is just the networking. And I would say Binghamton is no like any other place that I've lived in before. Like I said, I was born and raised in Baltimore, had the opportunity to live in Rhode Island for 4 years, and then I moved down to Georgia. So I've been in a couple of different places over my stretch of 26 years. So it's not a long time. But I would say that Binghamton, as far as the sense of family and community, has been the best example of just people willing to help people. And honestly, I think that's what kept me in this area for as long as I've been here, is because of the just the honestly that overall sense of community. The people that's like, you know what, when they really want to help you and there's no strings attached to it. I don't know if you receive that for yourself, Christian, and just kind of having people openly and willingly reach out their hand and say like, hey man, I like you, I appreciate you. You're new here, I'm gonna bring you in and we're gonna figure some things out together. And I haven't experienced that in a lot of other places. So I'm definitely appreciative for the community, the people that's here. I feel like that's really what a community is based off of, right? So the rest of the e-commerce and everything else will come.
Yeah, that I feel like that's very true. It's just like a small town and everyone knows each other, everyone's willing to help and everyone wants to see each other succeed, at least for the most part. So I just wanted to ask, a lot of our audience is college level students, and I feel like networking and going to events like that is just a huge facet of their career and their future. So what are some tips? You've obviously done a good job to build your network. What are some tips to build networks and connect with people in person? Because I feel like our generation is kind of steered away from that and are not as comfortable as connecting as in person as you would be over the phone or something. So if you have any advice to share with that.
Absolutely. I would say here's what I guess overall what I learned is life begins at the end of your comfort zone, right? So I feel like a lot of our generation, yeah, we grew up with social media. So a lot of things that we want to do is connect with people online and just DM them and try to, create a sense of relationship through there. But honestly, business is still done face to face. We're still it's still a human, it's a human transaction that happens all the time, right? So I think one of the things that I've done is honestly put myself out there in a lot of different networking events. I mean, and Binghamton has a lot of them. I mean, not only do you have the Binghamton Chamber that does a whole, like they do networking events, probably three or four events a month, but then you also have like Breaking Down the Silos that Binghamton University does, the Kauffman, incubator. There's so many different like just networking events that happens all throughout. Then we didn't even talk about nonprofits and things like that as well. There's a lot of those here as well. But I would say just honestly, make yourself aware of what's there. I mean, obviously, if you're going to be on social media, look on Facebook. I feel like events are posted on there all the time. And then don't be afraid to go to those events and with the intention to actually connect with people. I was just talking about this with my wife before. We were just kind of mentioning how some people just go to networking events and they just go with a friend. And then they say, you know what? Well, oh, we went to this networking event. You take a picture, you put it on Instagram, or you put it in your story. You're just like, hey, supporting so and so at this mixer, right? And then where in the end you didn't really go out there and make any viable connections to grow your career or to put yourself in a room that you haven't been in before, right? So I feel as though it's very important to go to those events. And if you do go with a friend, decide like make it a competition between yourselves, right? Be like, hey, we're gonna split up when we get here, and then maybe 20 minutes later we're gonna reconvene. But we got to at least talk to three people, right? Out of those three people, maybe you won't have a real solid connection with all of them, but at least you're expanding your network and putting yourself in a position to get to know and learn from other people and develop some really good relationships. And then after that, follow up with them, man. Like when I first came into the area, I hated the people that were like, oh yeah, let's stay connected and here's my card, right? And then we just never get on each other's calendar ever again, right? So when you come out of those networking events, find a way to systematically follow up with them, right? And majority of the time it's just a text message. Like I don't send a lot of emails today. Like if somebody's giving me a business card, it usually has a cell phone number on it. So I'll just shoot them a text. Hey, thank you so much for the conversation. I really do hope that we can extend this conversation. What's the best time for you to get coffee? So in that way, you at least set up a time to sit down and get to know people. And then you honestly find out how you can help them, and by default, they want to help you too.
No doubt. And I feel, especially today with all the online interactions rather than face-to-face, a lot of people kind of have a fear of connecting in person, like cold outreach, because you don't know the person, you don't know how to start the conversation. So what would you recommend to anyone out there that's kind of shy and just not really willing to go introduce themselves to someone and put themselves out there?
So two things. I feel as though one of them is, again, you no matter when you're in a room, I feel like you always kind of slightly know somebody, right? You may like I don't know if you guys ever heard of like an A-list connection, B-list connection, and C-list connection, right? Like A-list is like your close family, friends, people that you know, hang out with all the time. B-list is, you know, the distant people, like you know of them, but you don't really know them. And then you got C-list people that you just never even met before. It's like, you know, probably the majority of the people in the room when you're going into a networking event. Well, if you at least have a B-list person, right, which I feel like a lot of us do, walk into that room and just connect with that person first, right? And then from there, ask that person if they know anybody in the room that you should connect with and have them introduce you, right? So if you're kind of on the shy side, I would take that approach. Just because you're kind of creating this warm connection from one person leading you to another, instead of just having to go out there and I guess just fully put yourself on blast and just be like, hey, you know, do you like me or not? That's pretty much what we're thinking in our head when we first make comments, right? And then number two is just sometimes you just got to bite the bullet. Like my wife is a prime example of kind of being an introvert at heart, like just kind of wants to sit and observe people instead of actually engaging with them. And honestly, she stretches me every single day because she'll come out and be like, you know what? What I'm going to do is just compliment somebody on something that I like in a room, right? And that starts a conversation because people obviously wear items or things that they are proud of. So if you make a comment on it, but don't just make it like a statement, ask a question, right? So for example, if you really like somebody's shoes, Christian, right? And you see like, man, they got some nice wingtips on, just be like, hey man, I really like your wingtips. Where'd you get them? Cause now that starts a conversation cause they can talk back. Don't just say like, hey man, I like your wingtips and smile at them awkwardly, right? Cause then you make it an awkward situation for everybody involved. So hopefully those are two things that can really help some people, you know, kind of break that mold or that mental mindset of like, oh man, I'm just too shy to get out there and ask some questions or introduce myself.
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like we've all gone through like that same self-talk that you mentioned is like, oh, do they like me? Or, oh, like this is awkward, or, oh, am I doing it the right way and stuff like that. So just like, you know, building up the confidence and starting, like you said, with someone on the B list and just, you know, making yourself a little bit more comfortable with the situation is definitely key. And I just want to follow up with a question just because Christian and I, we've been doing this podcast for almost a year now. So obviously we've done a lot of networking, more than we did previously. I considered myself an introvert, but I've just seen like the power of building your network and like the things that it could do for you, just some of the experiences Christian and I have had because of it. So I just want to ask, like, is there maybe like a success story or something you could point to from your networking skills, maybe from the Binghamton area, or that has led to a business or a sale or anything you could tell the audience about?
Absolutely, man. And I feel as though the best example I can give is the connection of how I met my mentor, right? So I'm gonna try to, for the sake of not just being long-winded, because I can do that sometimes, I'm gonna try to shorten it down and just like easily digestible steps, right? Because when I first moved into this area, it was in October of 2015, but in September, the month before, I had to come up here and basically find an apartment. And I ended up stopping at the local Denny's that's right near campus, right? That's right on, 434. And I stopped in there to grab lunch, and I ended up chatting with one of the waitresses that was there. Really nice lady. She was just very personable. Hey, what are you in the area for? You know, are you here for school or something? I was like, nah, I graduated school. And she was like, you know, well, what did you come here for, right? Which I feel as though is everybody who's not from Binghamton, you get that question. Like, why the heck did you come here? And I told her, I basically, you know, again, got a job in sales and moved up here, an entrepreneurship major, all these different things. And then she ended up being like, hey, well, if you're an entrepreneurship guy, you know, do you ever keep your options open for different entrepreneurial opportunities and things that just happen around the area? And I looked at her kind of like with this dumbfounded look, like, absolutely, right? Like, I'm an entrepreneur, so definitely I keep my options open. And she was like, well, I can't promise you anything, but I can get you connected with a friend of mine who basically runs a private mentorship group and helps people kind of create passive income and things like that inside the area. And that conversation, like I said, happened in September, right? I exchanged numbers with that woman. And then I don't think she reached out to me, but just me being me, I just forgot to follow up with her, to be honest with you. I was like in the middle of moving. I was in Baltimore for like a couple of weeks. Then I finally moved up here to New York. So it was like a lot of transition happening in my life. And then I remember, I was like, man, I forgot I had that lady's number. And I reached back out to her in November, right? So 2 months later, it was just like, hey, you know, just wanted to reconnect with you. I know we connected really briefly in passing when I was at Denny's, but you told me about a business mentor that you had, and I would love to have an opportunity to meet him. And I was she got back to me really quick. She introduced me to her business mentor, and he actually owns part of Arctic Bear, Arctic Water locally. I don't know if you guys ever heard of that HVAC company, water company. But once I was actually introduced to him, man, I saw the lifestyle that he had and just the flexibility he had with his time. And I was like, man, what is it that you do? How do you do it? And that today is still, he's like my best friend to this day, right? I literally, right before this, us recording this, I was just at Thai Time eating lunch with him. Like that's how important he is to me in my life right now. Honestly, it was a lot of things that I learned from him, business thought process, mindset, how to be a leader, right? In this world where I feel as though sometimes leadership can be lacking. So just that connection alone, man, and I would say that's the biggest success story that I have from just networking. Just being friendly with somebody else, not necessarily in a networking event, but you know, just being, again, friendly, out and about.
Yeah, it's just putting yourself out there. And I feel like the stories that a lot of people share are so similar. It's like the one instance where you would never think something would come from it, something does. Right. And it's like the least unexpected. So that's dope. I just want to ask, like, is there a moment in time when you pinpointed that, like, that you were an entrepreneur? A lot of people, you know, had, you know, side hustles or gigs that they did throughout high school or later found out in college after trying to go through med school or law school and failing miserably. Was there like a point in time where you decided like you're an entrepreneur at heart?
Yes. And it started way back. So man, you're telling me to go way back now. So I worked for an entrepreneur since I was 9 years old. Right. I sold hats and t-shirts and peanuts at the Orioles and Ravens Stadium since I was 9 years old. Now, also, like, I was 13 when I was down there. So I don't want you guys to think like, oh, I was child labor or whatever else. But I was, you know, down there in that way. And I felt as though I always had a passion for just doing what the guy's name was Damon. Doing what Damon did. Right. And I remember when I was in ninth grade, I think it was ninth grade and a little bit of 10th grade, I actually sold. I would go to Rite Aid and Walgreens and everything else, and I would buy candy bars, two for a dollar, whatever it was, whatever deals it was. And then I would take them to school with Hi-C pouches and Capri Sun pouches and sell candy and different stuff in school. And then they ended up putting a stamp on that because they was like, no, you're taking sales away from our vending machine. So, Eddie, you got to stop selling candy. But it was immediately right then and there that I knew. I was like, man, you know what? Like, I'd rather work for myself. Like, I remember there's multiple times throughout my life where, again, I was working for this entrepreneur, and technically I was in sales, so I made, like, 20% of everything that I sold while I was down there. So it was, like, the closest thing I can get into an entrepreneur position while working for somebody else, right? And then I remember telling Damon at the time, was the guy that I worked for, I remember telling him, like, hey, man, I think I'm going to go and work for Finish Line just because I want to see what it's like to, like, work for a real corporation or a real company, right? And I remember him being like, all right, man, let me, like, you know, do what you got to do. Let me know how it goes, blah, 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 blah. And I remember working for Finish Line for, like, maybe 2 weeks. And I was like, this sucks. Like, this is absolutely horrible. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, I appreciated the discount that I got, right? And I appreciated, like, you know, having fun with some of the employees and stuff that was there. But, man, at that point in time, minimum wage was like $7.25. So like I would go in, I would work like 8 hours, whatever else. And I get paid like pennies, man, when I would come out of there. And I'd be like, this is absolutely horrible. Knowing that I can go down to Orioles and Ravens Stadium and I can sell, say, $500 worth of stuff and come home with $100 in my pocket, right? So it was like automatically in my mind, I was like, I definitely don't want to do this thing of working for somebody else or working for an hourly wage. Because I felt like I was putting in the same amount of time at Finish Line that I would be at, you know, down at the Orioles and Ravens Stadiums, but I was making like a third, actually probably a quarter of what I was making down at the stadium. So I was like, you know what? Immediately in my mind, it already started clicking. Like, I'm going to school. I basically better go to school for business. And then when I was recruited by Bryant, that was the first thing I asked. I was like, do you guys have a business degree program? And do you, more specifically, do you have an entrepreneurship program? And that was one of the deciding factors of why I went to go play where I played.
That's awesome. How long did you last at Finish Line? Did you just quit right after those 2 weeks that you talked about?
Yeah. So in those 2 weeks, I remember it was actually really funny. I don't know if you guys ever heard of FBLA or DECA.
Yeah. I'm actually in FBLA at Binghamton. I have like an event later today. That's kind of funny. You mentioned nice. That. Yeah.
That's dope. So I was a part of FBLA when I was in high school, and I met the manager of that Finish Line at an FBLA event that me and my teammate, we won the event for like our section. So he was like, yeah, man, come on in for an interview and everything else. So I went in for the interview, and yeah, at the end of the interview, he was like, oh, this is great. This is going to be amazing. We're going to love to have you here. We're going to train you, do a whole lot of other stuff. And like I said, for 2 weeks, I was there. But then the other thing to keep in mind, I was going away for college. So I think in his mind, he thought I was just hanging around and I was just going to be around for a long time. But it was my senior year. And I was like, I got to leave, man. Like, I'm going to be gone to school and everything. So I remember sitting down with them and being like, hey, I just want you to know, you know, I'm actually moving across to the other side of the county, and I'm giving you my 2 week notice, or I'm letting you know that I won't be available because I still had connections in that side of town, so I could have stayed there and worked. But he immediately was just like, why did you start if you knew that you were going to leave 2 weeks later? And I was like, well, I honestly wanted the experience and I wanted to know what it was like to work, you know what I mean? And I remember that, like, again, it was just one of those dumbfounded looks that he gave me, like, why are you even doing this? But yeah, I was only there for two weeks, Christian. And I was like, all right, I'm out. I got things to do. I got football to play. I had bigger dreams in my mind.
Yeah, that's funny. I just want to go back into like your present day routine. So obviously it looks like you're in your house right now sitting on a call with us. So what is your day to day kind of look like? Are you bouncing all over the place? Are you mainly working out of a home office? Are you just like centralized somewhere?
So my day-to-day, I do have an office. So during the day, I do work for Toshiba. So I sell copiers and printers and scanners and like document management technology and things like that for Toshiba during the day. And my office is basically based on 59 Court. So if you know where the radio station is, right downtown on the corner of State and Court, I work on the second floor of that building that's over there, right? But my day-to-day is honestly based around what I need to do there, right? So I usually, depending on the day, I'm typically up closer to like 7:30 is usually when I'm getting up. Some one of the Tuesdays, like tomorrow, I have a networking group that I got to go to in the morning. So an hour of my day is kind of spent networking, right? Ironically. But then from there, I pretty much go through a daily routine. So like every single night, my day changes, but I plan out my next day the night before. So like while I'm laying in bed or whatever else, I'll basically sit down and be like, you know what? I know I got this meeting that's already on the calendar, this meeting that's on the calendar. When am I going to plan in maybe time for prospecting? When am I going to plan in times for checking my email? Because I feel I don't have email connected to my phone because I feel like if I did, I'd check my email all day long, right? So it's just small little things that I feel as though the night before, I feel like you have to plan your day, because if you don't, the next day just fully gets away from you.
Yeah, just being prepared like ahead of time, it makes it a lot easier, because then you're more productive. You're not just wasting time, you know, thinking of like, oh, what else do I have to do? You know,
exactly.
And it seems like you have a lot of experience in sales, obviously from an early age selling at a football and baseball stadium. And obviously now selling for Toshiba. So what are some tips you have for some people that are just making their way into sales? And maybe also, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see amateur salespeople make?
That's a double-loaded question. So let's see. I would say overall, Let me start with the piece of like amateur salesmen and some of the mistakes that they made, because I was this guy, right? I feel like I can relate to those people, and it's not that I ascended or anything else. You just sometimes got to go through the crap to polish your craft, right? But I feel like a lot of people, they kind of make the sale about them and not about the other person, right? I feel like a lot of people are looking at sales as if, you know, I got a product that I just need to sell you. Not, I don't even care if you need it or if you want it, but I'm going to manipulate you into wanting it and buying it, right? And I feel like that's a connotation or a mindset that a lot of people in general have around sales, where honestly it's not. Sales is just helping other people, right? Identifying needs and then positioning solutions to help solve those needs, right? I feel as though Zig Ziglar said it best when he said, if you help enough people get what they want, you inevitably get what you want in the end, right? So I think that's number one as far as just, amateur salespeople, just know that when you're, whatever you're selling, believe in what you're selling, right? Because if you're not going to use it, and if you can't stand by it, then the person that you're talking to can definitely understand that and feel that. But number two is take the time to identify what they actually need and don't just push them what everybody else gets, right? Because what everybody else gets is probably not very specific to what they need in their business or their organization. Now, outside of that, I honestly forgot the first question that you asked. What was the first part of that?
Yeah, it's no problem. I just asked, what are some of like your best sales practices that you use on a daily basis that like others could apply to their sales routine?
Absolutely. So I would say I do a couple of different things. One thing you need to know if you're a salesperson, if your pipeline is dry, then you're going to be the most miserable person in the world. Like you need, it's a book by Jeb Blount called Fanatical Prospecting. And I recommend anybody that's looking to get into sales, pick up that book because it's gonna help train your mind to understand that although prospecting may suck, it's probably cold calls, is whatever else it may be, you're gonna have to learn to appreciate it. You don't have to learn to love it, but you have to learn to appreciate it because your pipeline is really what's directly connected to your success, if you're gonna eat that month, right? So I would say definitely pick up that book because it's just a huge piece of it. But from my perspective, it's being very intentional with who I prospect to, right? So I'm not kind of wasting my time spraying and praying, but taking a call list and saying like, hey, say for this quarter, I'm focusing 100% on religious organizations, right? So any churches, anything that has any type of issues with printing and copying inside of that realm, that's where I'm focusing, right? And then another thing for me is just my personality, I'm very personable. So I feel as though if I'm able to get in front of people, I kind of have a checklist in my mind, right? So like if I send you an email, my email is to get you on the phone. If I get you on the phone, my purpose of being on the phone is to find the time to get in person. Because I personally believe if you sit across from me, you'll understand the genuine trust that I give. And from there, we can definitely find a way to do business together. If it's that day, great. If it's 2 years down the road, even better, right? Because that means that you remembered and had a good relationship from that point forward. The last tip that I'll say is knowing the power of a handwritten note. So I feel like, again, we talked about, our generation now is just more so like, oh, I'll just send you an email to thank you for your time and everything else. Sending handwritten notes go such a long way. And what I also do myself, and I don't know if everybody does it, but I know it's a practice I've implemented and it's got really good feedback, is inside of my handwritten note, I also include a picture of my family and just let them know like, hey, this is, it's not necessarily, it's an indirect way of saying like, you're doing business with this family, not just me, right? So it's kind of like a sense of, all the salespeople that's out there, there's millions of people that sell what I sell, but I'm trying to make like that personal connection and say like, hey, this is family doing business with family, not just like say Toshiba doing business with your church. Does that make sense? So I try to really, really drop that home and say, this is what I want people to understand about that.
Yeah, I think that's a huge point that I've never really thought of before. If you just get down and get really personal with somebody, they're going to take it beyond the business aspect of it and just go man to man, trying to do business with another human being basically rather than a corporation.
Absolutely.
So How do you kind of rebound from being really close to closing someone and then it falls through? Does that like affect your mindset at all? Are you like shaken up during maybe the next meeting or do you just shake it right off and move on?
That's a great question. I would say 9 times out of 10, I shake it off and I move on just because I'm always a forward thinking person, right? And the reason why I can do that is because of the pipeline. If I didn't have a pipeline that had other prospects that I was going to have an opportunity to sit down with that day, then it probably would affect me more. Right. But since that pipeline is already full and I already know I'm going to be talking to 6, 7, 8 other people this week, then I never had that sense of like, oh, well, that one fell through. Cause it's like, well, I got 6 other ones that are still in the pipeline, right? It's still in the hopper. So I never really get kind of discouraged about that because it's sales. I don't take it personal You know, sometimes it comes down to even a personal relationship that person may have had with a competitor, right? So I never take any of those situations personal, because it's sometimes you can do everything you can do that from your side that you can control. You can do everything right, but still that person still decides in a different direction, not necessarily because of you. But then I do try to reflect on it, right? Like, say from my perspective, say in religious organizations, I might want to talk to the office secretary, right? They might be who I initiated conversations with, but then, you know, the decision came from the board member, and the board member's uncle was a representative of a different copier company, right? Well, at that point in time, like, yes, I did everything that I can do in that conversation with that office manager or that secretary, but I didn't kind of go deep enough in order for me to identify, like, oh, you're not the one that's actually driving the decisions, or your influence is not great enough to really say, like, overpower that uncle that other guy had that was on the board, right? But honestly, every once in a while, yes, you do get that one that you feel is like, man, I've been working on this for months, sometimes even years. And it really depends on the industry that you're in. Like, say for me, when I sold turf, if I lost one of them, it hurt, because selling turf, it was maybe 30 opportunities a year, right? So if you lose one of them, it's like, oh man, that sucks. But in the copier world, you know, there's opportunities, there's 30 opportunities a month. So it's a much more frequent and easier sales cycle, right? So that's that thought process. But yeah, every once in a while, maybe if it's a big account in my industry today, like if it's a $50,000 and above account, you're like, oh man, it's going to be good, I feel confident about it and everything else. And then you get hit with the, hey, sorry to let you know, but I got some bad news text. Then at that point, you know, you do kind of let it get in your mind a little bit. But then for me, I'm a short-term, just kind of like when I fail at things, I kind of have that short-term approach. Like it's just going to roll right off my back, because I know it's bigger and better things that's out there, right? I still got to serve other people.
100%. Yeah, there's always the next prospect that you could try to sell. So having that forward thinking mindset, especially in sales, because if you do, you know, obviously get mad about it and let it affect your next few calls, then it's just going to continue to have damage on what you do and in your sales reputation. So that's exactly. Definitely huge. I wanted to ask, you mentioned a few books in there in the last few answers. Like, how important are books to you? Obviously, self-education is a big aspect of our show, and being college students, there's so much more to learn outside of just lecture that we have to go to all the time. So what are some like books that you wish you read, I guess, back in college?
Man, that is a loaded, again, another loaded question, right? So I look at that as a, one thing that I do want to encourage people to do, because I thought about this and I thought about this a lot. So I'm glad that you asked this question, because I actually compiled a list of, I think it's 26 books that I've read maybe within the last, like within a 6-month time frame, right? And those books, they've all meant something different for me. So what I ended up doing, and I feel as though reading is a huge part of personal growth and growing yourself and making that investment in yourself. So I put this book, this list together, and I want to give it to somebody, like give it to people for free. It is like just a PDF for them to go and to kind of take a look at it, right? But if I had to pick three of them that I felt as though was the, like, just had the most amazing impact on me, one of them would be The Business of the 21st Century by Robert Kiyosaki. I don't know if you guys have ever heard that title before, but primarily for his talk about the cash flow quadrant and knowing the different ways of how you can generate income in today's world and being open to not just following the course that everybody else told you to take, right? Which is basically go to school, get good grades, go to college, get a good job, work till you die, right? I feel like that's everybody's kind of stereotypical way to be successful, where I feel like inside of that book, he really opened my mind to understand, like, bro, there's so many other ways to generate income, right? There's so many other options that you have, but I feel like we're never taught that. A lot of the times, because our parents in our generation, they were taught to go to school and get good grades, because the parents of their generation learned that if you got a degree, then you instantly made more money. Well, into today's world, 21st century, you know, 18th century mindset doesn't work in the 21st century, right? So it's kind of time to start shaking that up and doing some different things. So that's definitely book number one, Business of the 21st Century by Robert Kiyosaki. The next one is The Magic of Thinking Big by David Schwartz. Absolutely phenomenal book. I don't know if you guys had a chance to read it yourselves, but it's if you have the time, it's kind of a thicker one. If you don't do anything else, read chapters 2, 12, and 13 because it gives you an entire new thought process on just getting rid of like these failure diseases that all of us have, right? Of like, say, procrastination or just giving excuses for everything instead of just making it right, right? It's like all these different little pieces of thinking like, you know what? It takes the same amount of energy to think small than it does to think big. So why not take that same energy and have bigger dreams, bigger goals, and bigger things that you want to accomplish? But then it gives you kind of like the small little individual actions that you can take so that you can stay focused on that big dream and really make that thing come to fruition, right? And then the very last one I always like to tell people about, it's called The Dream Giver, right? Which it's honestly a little bit on the spiritual side, a little heavy on the spiritual side, but I like the book a lot just because it talks about now, say, if you think of that progression, right? Like, all right, now I understand that there's different ways to make income. And now I have a bigger dream than what I had at first in my life. The Dream Giver kind of helps you navigate like that unfamiliar water of like, all right, I got these things and stuff that I want to accomplish. But now I got these people that's telling me that it'll never happen. And I got, you know, people are like my comfort zone that I really don't want to get outside of because, you know, everything around me, I just like it, right? I kind of feel good where I'm at. But the Dream Giver kind of helps you understand like, no, man, you need to put yourself in a space of unfamiliarity, right? So that you can continue to grow and kind of push the limits of what you can learn and what you can achieve. So those three, I feel as though as far as anybody who's starting out, they're like, you know what? I got to figure out what I want to do in my life, or I just want to start making that investment in myself. I would read those three books, most likely in that order, just so you can kind of get a better idea of what you want to do and start having at least a conversation with yourself about what you want to pursue.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. I think just the sheer amount of opportunity that lies outside of the standard classroom, that's basically why we started this whole podcast in general, is just insane. Like, if I were to go to a lot of my classmates and just say, have you read Rich Dad, Poor Dad? Do you know about real estate investing? They just say like, no, like straight up no. Like, just the amount of knowledge that we've been able to gain by interviewing people like you, reading books, just being immersed in all of this content is just incredible. So completely, completely recommend self-education. We're going to move into the lightning round. You good for the lightning round? Okay, sweet. So basically, we like to end it off with a few quick questions. Hope you got your mind's thinking quick today because we like to put you on the spot here.
Let's do it, man. Fast twitch, muscle fibers.
Sweet. So first, if you have any questions for us before we move forward, just let us know. But otherwise, we'll just hop right in.
No, you're good, man. Let's do it. All right,
sweet. So if you could have dinner with any three people, dead or alive, who would they be and why?
Wow. Okay. Martin Luther King, for one. I definitely want to learn. I just feel as though when you look at his life, man, and what he's been able to accomplish in the time that he had, I mean, we're still living out his dream today, which is wow when you think about it. So I would just love to learn from him and just kind of how he bore all of the burdens of that leadership and just kind of still stand that example that he was and that we know him to be today, right? So Martin Luther King is definitely one of those guys. Another person, honestly, John Maxwell. I don't know if you guys know of John Maxwell, but I've read a lot of his books, put it that way. And I feel as though he's just like, at this point, the godfather of everything leadership. So I feel as though for me, I understand that as my life progresses, I feel like I am a natural born leader, but I also have to continue to work on that craft. And I hate falling into other people's pitfalls, right? So when you hear from a guy from like John Maxwell, who's been a leader his entire life pretty much, and he can give you kind of like those golden nuggets of, hey, don't do this and don't do that, avoid this sand trap and everything else, I feel like it just adds value to a young aspiring leader like myself, right? And then number three, that's a great, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like a third person. I know it's supposed to be a lightning round, so I'm supposed to be able to shoot these off real fast. If I had to pick anybody, and again, this my faith is a huge aspect of who I am. But it'd be Jesus Christ, man. I mean, he walked the earth. He did a lot of different things. He's got the biggest following that I know of, right? If he was alive when Twitter was around, I felt like he'd have broke the internet. But when you think about it, I feel as though just sitting down, being able to have a conversation with him face to face, if it was like in the flesh, I think that'd be a really cool experience.
Yeah, those are great answers. I definitely agree with a lot of those. John Maxwell is cool too. He's written just a ton of books. I just kind of had a quick follow-up question too from that. How would you define leadership?
I think leadership, honestly, is not necessarily – it's basically the people that you've been able to help, right? So, like, my mindset of leadership – is not necessarily what you accomplish, right? But it's the impact and the lives that you've had long after your life has ended, right? Like, I feel like if your message and your vision is still playing out years, decades, centuries after you've passed away, I feel like that's just an example of leadership, right? Because I feel like it all stands on that standpoint of servitude. The foundation is like everybody that we talk about today, we're just big servers. They're willing to give and sacrifice everything of their own in order for the greater good to be so much further along.
Yeah, that's a great definition for sure. Definitely agree with that. It's just being of service to others, and that's like definitely true leadership. So that's a good answer. The next question in the lightning round is, if you were in college, basically Christian and I's situation right now, what side hustle would you start and how would you go about starting it?
Side hustle. So when you think, just for clarification, when you think side hustle, are you thinking just something I'm going to make a couple extra bucks? Or are you thinking like, man, this is something I want to create like a long-term like cash flow from?
It could be either or, anything you could manage like outside of your school workload, I guess I'd say.
Gotcha. In that case, I'm a big proponent of network marketing. But I feel like network marketing has to be done correctly. So my biggest thing, I would encourage people to really research and look into network marketing and what companies and things are available. But more importantly, be aware of the people that you're getting in business with, right? So I feel like you have to be very selective of the people you associate with and the people that you attach your name to or your brand. Sometimes I interchange the name and brand thing. But I feel as though when you look at network marketing, there are so many different training systems and businesses and business models and things that are out there. But when you focus on, say, like, you know, a group that is more so interested in your personal growth and helping you become a better person, a better individual, then I feel as though that's more likely a person that's going to be like interested, invested in you being successful, right? I'm not a proponent of just going on Facebook and just sharing stuff all day long, or just saying, hey, buy my rap, or I'm introducing you to this party or whatever else. Like, I feel like that's kind of dragging the network marketing brand through the mud, and it's kind of giving everybody a sour taste. But when you have that mindset of like, you know what, no, I'm leveraging this as a real business, then I feel like college kids have an opportunity not only to have a business of their own, but at the same time, you have access to mentorship, like true mentorship, people that have done and created success inside of a realm that is very simple. I wouldn't say easy, but it's simple for you to create success there. But it takes accountability. It takes some ambition, right? So those are the pieces that I feel as though for a college kid, I wish I was introduced to some of my mentors that I have today around network marketing when I was in college, because I felt as though my life would be a lot different today, because I would have learned what I know now at 26, at 18, right? So my life at least would have been accelerated by, 8 years.
Yeah, no doubt. And I feel like college campuses are just a really prime place to kind of get your name out there and get in front of a lot of ears, because obviously there's a ton of kids that are around your age and you can really resonate with easily. So definitely a great recommendation for anyone out there listening. And the last question is a pretty deep one. We hope you have something valuable. A lot of people get stumped on this, but we believe you got this. Ready? What's one thing you know today that you wish you knew when you were 19?
What's one thing I know today that I wish I knew when I was 19? Wow. Okay. I wish if like, I'm worded this way. If I can go back today and talk to my 19-year-old self, right? I just got on the campus and I was basically, you know, I started my college football career, right? And I remember having this mindset in my mind that I was like God's gift to earth, right? Because I feel like a lot of guys, I don't know how many of your listeners or maybe D1 athletes or anything like that or earned a scholarship, but you go from being on top of the world to then basically being at the bottom again. Like you went from like my big man on campus in my high school, you know, all the accolades, most likely to succeed, all this other, you know, stuff that I got from there. And then I walk on campus and I'm a little dude, man. I was 6'3", 280 pounds, but my roommate was 6'6", 290 pounds or whatever it was, right? So I'm just like, dang, bro, like I'm now the little person. And I kind of got this sense of I was just going to be handed a position to play, right? Because it was just kind of like, oh, I was just going to walk in. I got recruited. I got a full ride. Like they want me to be here. And I lost that sense of like, I have to earn this, right? And I didn't pick that back up probably until I was 22 or 23 years old, right? Where I felt as though I had this mindset where I was just like, things should just fall into my lap compared to me having to earn it, right? Because I felt like since I got the scholarship, I already earned it. So therefore everything else would just roll out. So if I had to go back and talk to my 19-year-old self, I would remind me that, bro, nothing in life is just given to you, right? Nothing in life is just a handout, just, you know, you showed up and rolled out the ball and you're just going to go play, right? Like, no, man, you like everything in life, you have to earn it. You got to work for it, right? You got to be intentional and you got to put in extra time when people aren't looking, right? And I say that because I'm talking about my experience in football, but that's applicable in life, man. Like even as college students, you guys yourself, right? Like when you're not in class, you probably can think about some things where, you know what, I could be doing this, but instead you started watching Netflix, or instead, you know, you just was wasting time. You're on social media, just kind of killing time, right? There's so many things that I feel like all of us, we know we can be doing something else to get better with the time that we have, but we decide not to. And if I had to go back and talk to my 19-year-old self, I'd be like, dog, it doesn't matter all the parties and stuff that's going on. It doesn't matter what your friends and your teammates are doing. If they're out drinking, partying, whatever else, focus on your craft and go get better, right? Because you hear stories all the time about, say, like Dwayne Wade. Like I heard a story from one of his teammates when he played at Marquette. And they said, what was the number one thing you remember about D. Wade? And it was like, oh, well, every single Friday night, the team would go out like clockwork, but D. Wade would go to the gym. And he would be in the gym from whatever, 7 o'clock at night, all the way until 1 o'clock in the morning when everybody else was out drinking and doing everything else. But it was because D. Wade knew that he was going to the league, right? He like kind of made that decision and then willed it to happen. So I think just being accustomed to like, hey, it's hard work and I got to do stuff in my spare time when nobody else is looking.
That's dope. That was a perfect way to end it. That was really, yeah. No. Because I feel like people always try to find a substitute to hard work. Like, oh, I'll just get lucky and have an opportunity given to me. But at the end of the day, there's really no way around just putting in the work and putting in the hours, like you said, even if sometimes you have to sacrifice being with your friends or going out and stuff like that. So great way to end it, man. You just dropped a ton of value. I mean, I really appreciate your time. I'm sure Andre will say the same in a second, but definitely need to link up in person since we're all local here.
Definitely.
Absolutely, man. Thank you.
Yeah, and if you just want to – what's that?
I was about to say, I tell people all the time, man, the harder I work, the luckier I get. I hate when people call me lucky. I'm not lucky. I just work harder.
Exactly. Like we talked about earlier with even the network and stuff, is the more you put yourself out there, the more you do, it's just the better results. And if you just wanted to link that resource that we talked about in the beginning as well, this would be a good time to do it. And I'll be sure to do that in the intro as well.
Absolutely. So like I said, I want to give out a free gift to you guys. If you go to eddiethomason.com, that is eddiethomason.com. You can go and read and download. It is the ultimate personal growth guide. So inside of there, I talk about some of the things that I've learned through just like growing yourself and unlocking like those seeds of greatness that really is locked inside of you. And like I said, I'm going to give you guys that list of books with a description of everything that I learned. Not necessarily everything, but a brief description of what I learned from each of those books. So then that way you can kind of take it and run with it, depending on where you are individually in your personal growth journey.
Amazing, man. I appreciate that. Our audience definitely does as well too, because it's great self-education right there. So appreciate it, man. So we'll probably get this out, like we said, next Thursday, if that works. If not, obviously, just let us know. I'm sure we'll be in contact, but appreciate it, man. That was dope.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you guys having me on. It was, that's funny, man. I feel like you guys got to give some questions. Those fire round questions are tough. So.
It's funny because we call it lightning round, and at the end, everyone's like, you got to find a new name for that one.
So this is a deep dive round, man.
They're fun though. People really enjoy them. So
yeah, it does. It makes you think. So my answers aren't always. Always tell people I try not to answer the first thing that comes to mind, because then it's just like a surface level answer. But when you ask a deeper question like that, it takes time, bro. You got to think about that one.
Yeah, those were good answers, though. You crushed them, man. Appreciate it.
Take care, man.
All right. Have a good one, guys. Nice to meet you.
Too. Stay in touch.
Absolutely, bro.
Hey, guys. Show some love for the Real Talk University podcast by subscribing and leaving a review on the Apple Podcast app. See you all next week.